Good morning. Welcome to Focus 5. Hey, it's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back here to the program Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's a mechanic and knows a lot about cars, and for a long time now has been stopping by on a regular basis. We try to have him on the program every season so that people who are listening can call in and ask questions about their cars. And if you have a problem or some car-related question, just give us a call and tell us what kind of car it is and give us the best description you can. And Rick, we'll see if he can help you out. I think I said before the news that whenever we have doctors on the show, I say, we can't do this. Can't do diagnosis over the phone. Well, that's exactly what it is we're talking about doing here. And Rick's pretty good at it. So give us a call, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for coming back. Gasoline prices keep going up. I don't think we're expecting they're ever going to go back down again. No. At least they're never going to be what they were. So let me ask you this, and it's something we've talked about before. People are interested in getting the best mileage possible from their cars. So in terms of maintenance, what should they make sure they keep in mind?
Well, the scheduled maintenance is in the owner's manual. You need to refer to that. Typically, servicing is every 10,000 miles. Some cars, it's every 15,000. And then in between is just normal oil services. The tune-up components, we think about spark plugs. There really aren't any adjustments anymore on the cars. As cars near 100,000 miles, the oxygen sensors, which is influential to the computer, to kind of fine-tune the air fuel or the fuel delivery and consequently the mileage, as you mentioned, should be replaced. Mm-hmm. Tire pressure is extremely important. It's very often overlooked. Obviously, as seasons change, tire pressures change. So in the winter, tire pressures will go down numerically just because of the pressure change due to temperature. And so that's important to check. Driving habits, obviously, are the number one characteristic. But just the normal maintenance, the oil services, tire pressures. If you've got a lot of stuff in the trunk, you know, if you've got 300 pounds of stuff in the trunk, I mean, you get cars all the time where sometimes it takes me 20 minutes to get down to the spare tire because there's so much stuff back there. Golf clubs, obviously you don't need golf clubs to be dragging around every day unless you play every day. So all that extra weight contributes to decreased mileage also. Yeah.
There are a variety of different fuel additives, things I know you go down to place where they sell auto parts. There's a whole wall full of stuff. One thing that you have over the years always recommended was fuel injector cleaner 4 times a year.
Correct.
That's what you've said. Is there anything else that you've ever seen that you can put into the tank in addition to the fuel, in addition to the gasoline, that can improve your mileage?
No. And if you read, it's funny, if you read some of these claims on different products that are out there, and you buy this one product and it'll give you X amount of miles per gallon increase. You buy this other product and it gives you this. And if, you know, say if you looked at 3 different products, that would fit your car, and you put them all on your car, you should be taking gas out of the car.
It should be making gas.
Right.
In the tank.
So if these products were so good, and they really did as advertised, it would seem to me that the manufacturers would have them installed from day one. But they don't.
Okay. So other than follow what it says in the manual for maintenance, make sure that your tires are correctly inflated.
Mm-hmm.
And this, maybe you would say, do this other thing. If you have fuel injection, do this injector
yes.
clean.
Right.
Other than that, it sounds like there's really not a whole, and don't carry more weight than you need to in the vehicle. Other than that, that's pretty much
it. That's pretty much all one can do, and of course, driving habits.
And now there, you're talking about what? Quick starts and stops?
Quick starts. When you're on the interstate, I strongly encourage you to use cruise control. When you drive on the interstate, you can always tell who's not using their cruise control. Because 1 minute they'll be going 80, and then you pass them, and you have the cruise control on, and then they fall back behind you, and then they zoom past you again. It's that modulation or changing of the accelerator pedal obviously changes fuel mileage. So if you can maintain a constant set speed, and then these cars today actually learn how you drive. So they're actually adjusting. So that if you're staying at a constant speed, it'll learn that process. And a lot of times if you have a car that has instant miles per gallon display on the dash, when you first get on the interstate and you set the cruise control, it'll be at a certain number. And then after you've gone 20 minutes, you'll notice that it'll rise numerically. That's because the computer is adjusting to the driving style at that time. So cruise control is very important.
Okay. Well, one other thing, I'm sure maybe some people will remember the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit and the idea that that was supposed to conserve fuel.
It was supposed to.
So then that leads to this question, well, if you're going to be on, you're on some kind of extended driving, interstate, tollway, whatever, will you get significantly different mileage, say, if you go 55, you go 65, you go 75 for an extended period of time? Is that speed going to affect your mileage?
As a general rule, the higher you go, the less the mileage will be. Obviously, you may find a certain speed, like a magical speed, that may affect mileage or make mileage at a maximum. And sometimes it's just a matter of experimenting with that. But the one thing about cruise control I should mention, when it's raining, you should never use cruise control.
And why is that?
Because if the car should slide or spin or get out of control in any manner or decrease speed, as you know, when the vehicle decreases speed, like as if you go up over a hill, you'll notice that sometimes the transmission will actually kick down a gear to try to maintain that speed going up the hill. Well, the same thing can happen in the rain. If for some reason it was to lose some speed, the cruise control will try to compensate for that and accelerate quickly, and it may break the wheels loose. So it's a safety issue in the rain.
Okay, so long as it's a nice sunny day, pavement's dry, you're going to have a long drive, use the cruise control.
Yes.
Okay. We've got some callers here to talk with. Let's do that. We'll start with someone in Indiana, and this is line one. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm in Urbana, but...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have a 96 VW Passat that I haven't driven for 5 or 6 months, and I was wondering if you could go over what service things I need to get done. I assume I have to get it towed into a... for maintenance to get it back up and running. It was running when it started sitting, so I just wonder if you could go over that with me. Thanks.
Well, I mean, I assume it's sitting inside.
It's been sitting outside.
Outside, okay. Why did you mention towing?
I didn't. My understanding is that when they sit for a long time, the fluids kind of settle, and it's not good to start them back up. I think that I need to get the battery charged as well, so...
Yeah, I would just charge the battery and make sure all the fluid levels are fine and start it. I mean, I don't see that there's an issue that you should have to tow the vehicle, because obviously when you tow it, when you get it to wherever you're towing it to, they're going to start it and drive it in or drive it around the block, whatever the case may be. Depending upon the condition of the oil when it was last changed, I would probably put that at the top of the list. And then obviously the battery should be tested. As a general rule, batteries have a life of 5 years. So depending on where the battery is in this particular vehicle, you may want to just change it. But they can charge the battery and load test the battery, which is a process of evaluating its overall condition. Next thing to look at would be the tires. Make sure there aren't any cracking of the sidewalls or cracks between the tread of the tire. And just normal fluid checks and top things off, but other than that, I don't think you'd see much to worry about.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Well, now we will go to Indiana. This is line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I think I've reached my level of competence when it comes to mechanical things with my car. A buddy of mine says that he drove my car, and what happens is that sometimes when you're at a stoplight and you take off, it acts like it's been flooded. And it, you know, sort of chokes up a little bit, then it clears itself, and all of a sudden, instead of 10 miles an hour, you're going 20. And he said his understanding that there was some kind of connection between the transmission and the carburetor and something else that controls actually what's going on. And it's very intermittent. It doesn't happen constantly. It's just ever so often. But I started thinking maybe a safety issue if all of a sudden I want to move fast and it act like it's flooded. You know, I'm not going to move fast. I may get hit, or just the opposite. I might all of a sudden jolt out and hit somebody. I wonder if that were true. I've done about everything I know what to do, and I think maybe I better take it to the dealer if this situation with the connection between the transmission and the carburetor and accelerator and all that is true.
What year and model
is it? It's a 95 Oldsmobile.
Okay. That's going to be a fuel-injected car. So
yeah.
As far as
yeah.
It doesn't have a carburetor.
Sorry, yeah.
That's okay.
I'm talking my, you know.
That's okay.
50s.
Yeah, well, that's why I was asking.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned carburetor. But why do you, you mentioned transmission twice. Was there a reason?
Yeah, well, a friend of mine who's, a shady tree mechanic, basically, he says that you should have your, have the transmission checked. He thought there was some sort of servo mechanism between the rotation of the transmission and how the fuel injector puts the gas in the car and the cylinders. Because I told him, I said, something's actually like it's flooded, you know, like we had from carburetors in the 50s. Then all of a sudden it clear up and you're going a lot faster than you thought you were. And just the reverse, sometimes it'll, instead of slowing down, it all of a sudden clear immediately and you have your foot pretty well pressed on the accelerator pedal and you're going pretty fast. And I've almost had one accident with it, and so I've been sort of put it aside and drive my other car, and I thought I'd just wait until you showed up, and it was just a few days, and here you are, and I thought I'd ask you that question before I take it into a shop.
No check engine light?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that kind of rules out any of the sensors that the computer is monitoring.
Okay. Okay,
so,
good.
So the next question would be when you accelerate, I assume this is on a normal acceleration?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So when you accelerate normally and you get to the spot where it, you say it acts like it's flooded or it bogs or hesitates, maybe, is that a better way to describe it?
It's just when I start out from, waiting for the light to turn, then I'll start out and it'll bog on me, you know, and the guy behind me is expecting me to be traveling about, you know, the same level of speed and increase I was doing. All of a sudden I see faces right in my rearview mirror, so I'm getting concerned about it, and I called the shop, and they mentioned a rather outlandish price to, you know, check it hourly, and I just wanted to make sure that, you know, area for asking questions that were true, that's all.
Well, probably the easiest way, when it hesitates, it's not like, there's two issues. It could be a fuel-related, and it could be ignition-related. And the simplest way to isolate the two is ignition is very much like a light switch. It's either on or it's off.
Yeah.
It's very crisp, very definitive.
Yeah.
Fuel-related is kind of, you can tell it's kind of going to change or it's not going to respond as you expect.
Yeah.
So how would you describe it?
Well, the only thing I'd come up with is my experience of, you know, like being flooded.
Okay.
And all of a sudden it clears.
All right.
And,
okay.
And
so
where are we bolting away? It's never like it died on me.
Okay.
In that sense.
All right. So the next thing to do when it does this bogging down is if you lightly lift on the accelerator pedal and then squeeze it gently again, see if it fixes the problem.
Okay.
Then that means it's too lean. Meaning it's not getting enough fuel. Because what happens when you let up on the accelerator pedal is you allow the throttle plate to close.
Yeah.
Well, the fuel that's already been delivered is still there, so then you've restricted the air, in essence made it richer just for a moment.
Yeah.
And then if that fixes that hesitation, then you know it's too lean. So then I'd be looking at fuel pressure, fuel filter, injectors, I can't remember this, which, depending on which engine you have, you may have a mass airflow sensor in there. And that mass airflow sensor, sometimes they'll get little fibers on them from the air filter. And they don't deliver the fuel correctly.
Okay. Good. Well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, thank you.
At least I can talk some sense to the mechanic now. So,
okay.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Goodbye. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign, and he's with us every couple months to talk about car care. And if you have a problem, give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next, we will talk with somebody on line number two right here. Hello.
Hi. I know what the answer to this is, but there's some odd things that Well, let me just lay it out. My manual says 60K, change the transmission fluid. This is a 99 new Beetle. And I took it out to a quick oil change place, and they said, we checked our indications, and they say that it's a lifetime fluid, whatever that means. And they also said that there's some kind of special monitoring, not a tool to getting access to the transmission or anything, but something that you have to have to monitor how you put the fluid in. Does that make any sense to you?
This is an automatic?
Yeah. I can't unpack it. I mean, basically, I have to go to the dealer or some VW specialist that has the right kind of tool. But it isn't. They implied it wasn't a tool. It was some kind of meter, as if there's like multi-chambers and you have to have the fluid in the right pressure in each, or right volume in each. I don't know. Does that?
I'm not sure.
I'm boggled. The manual says 60K. They said they had something that indicated that you don't change it until you're doing something more.
Well, the manual is what.
Right. I'll follow that. But I'm just wondering why this noise is around the issue, because it doesn't seem like it.
I'd have to look it up. A good site is a company referred to as All Data.
Okay.
ALLDATA. .com.
Data or Bata?
Data.
Okay, All Data.
Yeah, you might go to that website and they'll give you.
I hadn't Googled it yet, but I thought since you were on, I would just ask you about it. And I'm not surprised that there isn't any good answer except more research or take it to the dealer. And
well, some of the cars do have lifetime fluid in their their transmissions, but if your manual specifically says at 60,000 it should be changed, then that's when it should be changed.
Right.
Some of them don't have a conventional dipstick.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, some cars, Mercedes in particular, they have a dipstick too, but there's no dipstick in there. So you have to buy this special tool every time you service the Mercedes products that you insert in there to actually check the fluid level. Now, I don't know if this Beetle, next time I don't have a lot of automatic Beetles that we work on, so that's why I can't really answer this question. But some of them actually have a plug in the center of the pan that you fill through. You have to have like a J-looking tube to fill the fluid back up because they don't have a fill plug on the top or on the side.
So it is a special tool.
And sometimes they are like that. And then the fluid level has to be at a certain level at a certain temperature. So sometimes you have to monitor transmission temperature. When you get to a certain temperature that they specify, then that's when you check the fluid level. But without reading about it, I'm not specifically.
Okay. Sorry to stump you so early in the show here.
That's okay.
Well, thanks for the call. Okay. So now let me get this straight. On a Mercedes, if you're going to check the transmission fluid, you have to have some sort of a special tool put in. But you can only use that thing one time?
No, the tool, it's just a long dipstick, basically, is what it is. Right. And a lot of them have at the top of the dipstick tube, the cap that's on there, it's like a sealed cap. So you actually break it when you remove it. It's like a tamper-proof thing.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, a lot of this stuff is you got to shake your head sometimes.
So it just means you got to have one extra thing in your shop just to do that one job. Okay.
Yep.
Well, let us continue. And next, I think we are going to talk with somebody in Champaign, I believe. How about line number 3? Hello.
Hello. Is this line 3?
Yes.
Whenever I start my car, when I turn on the key, there's a sound. And I wondered what was causing that. I'm not saying it exactly right, but,
So this is when the car starts, or
as
while
soon as I turn the key, it goes.
Well, when you say as soon as you turn the key, do you mean when you turn the key so that the starter operates?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you hear it when the starter is operating.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after the engine starts,
it's just that one, and then it stops.
Okay. Well, if it's only associated with the operation of the starter motor, then I would think it's related to that component.
So is it something I should do something?
I would take it by to whomever services your vehicle and just ask them to listen to it and give you an opinion?
Yeah, part of the problem is it happens about 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might even have to leave it just in case it doesn't happen.
Well, you know how to duplicate it or how many times it takes to start the car to duplicate it. So if you
Oh, no, it just happens the first time.
Just in the morning only?
No. I mean, it happens when I turn the key, and that's it. And then each time I start the car, it happens, or most of the time.
Okay.
But I guess the best thing to do is take it in. And
yeah, just let them listen to it.
Listen to it.
Right.
Assuming that may be the time it doesn't do it.
Well, you said it does it 9 times out of 10.
Yeah,
so.
Right. The point is it always starts the first time I do it, so I've never...
Well, at least you're paying attention.
Any
any funny noises, you should address them.
Yeah, address it. Okay,
yes.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll talk next with someone in South Chicago Heights on our line 4. Hello.
Hi, this is Jim.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a good program going there. But I got a question for you, and it's a no-brainer, actually. But I have arguments with some people about what should and should not be done when it's time to change the fuel filter. And maybe you can settle this argument. I'm thinking normally anywhere between 4 and 6 months you should change your fuel filter or any certain mileage. And you know if you don't do that and the fuel filter gets clogged up, you have to drop the gas tank, remove the fuel filter from the, if it could burn out the fuel pump. If you don't do that, the fuel pump could overwork itself and burn itself out. And, you know, you can run anywhere between like $1,200 and $1,400 for a repair just because you don't change your fuel filter and it overworks the fuel pump, which burns itself out. And my argument with a couple individuals about this are telling me you don't need to change that fuel filter that often. And I'm saying, yes, you do at least twice a year.
And, like, what year of cars are we discussing?
Anything, really.
Anything fuel injected?
Yeah.
Okay. Generally, fuel filters, my thought on that is every 15,000 miles.
How many miles?
15,000.
Okay, well, that's pretty regular.
But as far as, see, some cars, just like you said, have a filter in the tank, but it's actually a screen. And it's, in essence, it's never serviced. Those that have the external filter should be changed every 15,000 miles.
Okay. Well, like I'm telling you, I'm having this argument with these guys, and they're telling me they don't need to be changed that often.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling them, if you don't change your fuel filter and it clogs up, it's going to burn up your fuel pump, which means you're going to have to drop the gas tank, change the fuel pump, and it's going to cost you anywhere between $1,000 and $1,200 or $1,300. And why not change the fuel filter, which is relatively inexpensive to change, and to have that done with, and you get peace of mind that, you know, you're not going to have that problem.
Right. Well, like I said, that's what we usually recommend, is every 15,000 miles. So
okay.
I don't know.
You pretty much answered my question. I'm thinking at the very least, you know, the 30 or 40,000, you should change it. But if you're thinking it should be changed more regular, you know, I'll pass this on to the friends that have this argument with me.
Right.
All right. Good luck with that.
All right. Thank you.
We're at our midpoint here. We'll talk some more with our guest, Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. Take some more calls in a moment. However, first, we need to do this. We're going to pause for a moment for this test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test. And you're listening to WILL Urbana. This is Focus 580. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're also happy to have here on the show Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. Every couple of months, he's here. We talk about cars. And if you have a problem, give us a call and he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And our next caller is in Urbana, line one, right here. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a 98 Honda Accord. I have faced this problem occasionally that when I start the car, it starts, but it dies up quickly. I tried to push on the accelerator pedal, but it just doesn't seem to be working, and it dies off. And sometimes I have to try up to 10 times before it remains on. And sometimes when I'm driving the car, like in a highway, for example, it dies off, and but it comes back quickly, so I don't have to start the car. But it just comes back quickly. But I was wondering, what do you think about this problem?
No check engine light?
When I'm driving, then you mean in general? Like, there's no light on, actually.
This is a yellow light. It says check engine.
No.
Well, as far as starts and dies is concerned, is this more so when it's extremely hot out, or does it seem to make any difference with temperature?
I don't think it makes any difference with temperature.
Okay. But it's common enough that you experience this every day?
No, it's not an everyday thing. It happens like every 10 days or something like that. I have shown it to my mechanic, and he says it might be because of the fuel pump, so I might need to change that. But he was not sure, so I didn't do it.
Right. Well, that's the hard part. You have to monitor fuel, mm-hmm. fuel pressure, and the ignition system. And once you know which system is at fault, then you can diagnose that area. But until you can leave it with somebody where they can actually see the problem, and at the time they're monitoring fuel pressure in the ignition system, then they'll know. Yes, it could be a fuel pump, but as a general rule, a fuel pump doesn't make a car die while driving.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a no-start condition because as the motor gets old, it sometimes doesn't start spinning.
Uh-huh.
When it dies on you, is it like instantaneous, like you just turn the key off?
Yeah.
Okay. So more than likely, it may be associated with the distributor. The igniter.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of problems with the igniters on Hondas, which is a component inside the distributor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But one has to monitor the two systems to truly repair it.
Okay.
Thank
you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Back to Belgium here, line number two. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mr. Karch, I'd like to talk to you and Mr. Inge about something that I'm sure you may not know too much about. I'm sure you deal with hybrid cars to
yes.
some extent, probably.
Yes.
And Mr. Inge knows that I'm a person that's very strongly interested in hydrogen or fuel cell type technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been looking into situations such as this. And right now, I have come across a fuel cell that seems to be working in production, and it's been used mainly in lift trucks. I don't know if you heard about it, if you have any opinions about it. The name of the organization is URA. I'll spell it, O-O-R-J-A, Protonics. And they produce a methanol fuel cell that burns methanol. Now, it's not as good as what I would like to see, but it is at least moving in the right direction. And they use it because in warehouses, they can't use carbon-emitting
fuels,
and because it causes a lot of problems. You get several of them in the warehouse, and before you know it, you're dropping people over dead. And so they've gone to methanol fuel cells to get rid of the battery chargers, which are another very dangerous aspect of lift trucks in warehouses. They have a lot of problems with explosions and stuff because of hydrogen, obviously. And I was wondering, do you have any opinions, any thoughts, any ideas how we could move towards this direction?
No, I haven't really. Obviously, you know more about it than I do.
Yeah.
I haven't done any reading on that, but as you know, for major manufacturers to make changes, that's cost is obviously number one, and just in terms of requirements for increase in fuel economy across the board of the manufacturer is a huge expense as well. So, I mean, changes like that seem to me, anyhow, would be very expensive, and not to mention the time involved. So, I mean, I'm sure over time things will change, but it just, you'd think if manufacturers were leaning that way, they'd be talking about it.
Yes, sir, I see where you're coming from, but what I'm pointing out is that I try to be, I'm trying very hard to be proactive in that direction, and mm-hmm. and using Mr. Inge's show as a forum to start people thinking and asking the manufacturers, say, we need to go in this direction. This is something that we probably would be best for everybody involved. And these people can be found online. If you'd like to find some more information about them, you'd have to Google that spelling I had, Protronic, Protronic, and they have some very interesting things to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, let me ask you this question, because obviously there's great concern about how much oil we use and the cost of oil and cost of gasoline. Say that for a while we were going to stick with the internal combustion engine essentially as we know it. What do you think by applying the best science and technology we have essentially to the engine design that's pretty much like what we know, what do you think we should be able to get in terms of fuel economy? I mean, what do you think is the best you could hope for in terms of miles per gallon?
Well, I think, isn't there a reward for developing the 100-mile-per-gallon
car? I think there is.
Something along those lines. And it's like $1 million. I mean, it's pretty significant.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't know numerically because, you know, you're comparing cars that have different drag coefficients, they have different weights, mm-hmm. but to come up with a number that all of them should achieve, I really don't know.
There are some small cars, some Hondas, I think, where they have said that they could get, aren't there some Hondas where they actually say that they're getting close to 50 miles
mm-hmm.
a
yes,
gallon?
There are.
So at least that's something that should be possible, if providing that you are okay with having quite a small car. That's
right.
Probably the issue, too, is the weight of the car makes a big difference. So if you have to haul stuff or you have to haul a lot of people, maybe that's not going to be an option. But if you could have, you know, if you could be okay with a car that basically sat two people and had enough room for a couple of sacks of groceries, well, then that it's possible to get some pretty impressive mileage mm-hmm. figures at that size.
Well, you know, the engineers work on that every day. And it just seems to me that in terms of the internal combustion engine, that to get any numbers greater than that, I think would be very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Bet you think better than about 50 miles a gallon, that would
well,
be
tough to get.
Well, it
seems to me that with the technology and the fundamental operation of an internal combustion engine, you know, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an engineer could answer that question a lot better than I could.
Is there an absolute relationship between the performance in terms of how many miles per gallon you get and the size of the engine? Is a smaller engine always going to be more fuel efficient than a bigger engine?
I would say as a general rule, yes.
So a four-cylinder engine is going to be more fuel efficient than a six.
Right. I mean, it makes less total horsepower, maximum horsepower, than a large V8 would. And, yeah, so, like, you know, it takes X amount of horsepower to maintain 60 miles an hour. And if you've got extra cylinders, they're all being delivered fuel, so the mileage is going to be less on a larger engine, yes.
Hmm. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. We got a number standing by, and we'll go next to Charleston. How about that? We'll start out Charleston, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question on a Chevrolet V8 350 engine. It's got the throttle body on it. And would changing the injectors in the throttle body, would that improve the gas mileage since it's getting pretty poor gas mileage?
Well, it depends. The easiest way to answer your question is to remove the air cleaner assembly from the engine and I usually use a timing light. You know what a timing light is?
Yeah.
Okay. If you take a timing light and put it, like if you're standing at the front of the vehicle and you're looking at the two injectors, the two throttle body injectors, put the timing light behind the injectors and spray the time or point the timing light at the spray pattern of the injectors.
Uh-huh.
And it'll freeze those droplets. And what you're looking for, whether or not to replace the injectors, would be if you see big drops of fuel coming out of the injector. That's definitely going to affect fuel mileage, which means the injectors are dirty.
Uh-huh.
But the timing light is an excellent tool to look at that.
So would you plug that in, like if you were doing the timing on that?
Yeah, just hook it to any wire, any plug wire.
And then look for big droplets?
Right, exactly.
Well, like I looked in there, and you can see it's like dripping droplets, you know, around the
and the sides, up high.
Yeah, you know, like it's up high in that, and then it was running rich because they had the analyzer, and it would show it was running rich.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's those big drops of fuel that the engine can't deal with.
Coming from the injectors.
So, if you use a timing light, it'll be really clear to you. You'll be able to see it really well.
And that can affect the mileage big time then, right?
Yes, it will. Yeah. Are you monitoring the oxygen sensor voltage?
No, I didn't monitor that either.
Okay. But yeah, if you monitor oxygen sensor voltage, if you've got numbers above 0.7 volts all the time, yeah, that means it's definitely running rich.
And is that bad on the engine, like pre-wear the rings and that?
Yeah, it is. It can be if it's excessive. The other thing that a lot of people forget about on these new cars is thermostat operation. You know, they're supposed to be operating around 210 to 220 degrees coolant temperature.
Uh-huh.
And if they don't get to that point, the computer never adjusts the fuel mixture. And, for example, if a thermostat is stuck open.
Yeah, I've changed the thermostat several times periodically.
Right.
And there's a gauge, like a temperature gauge. It goes to about
halfway.
Well, between 11 and 12 o'clock position. It goes from like 9 to 3 o'clock position on the dashboard.
Yes.
There's a temperature gauge, not a dummy light, but a temperature gauge.
Right.
So that's what I have, but I know the gas mileage has just been crappy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just been terrible.
And then I would monitor those oxygen sensors and make sure those oxygen sensors are working correctly also.
Well, I hope that gets into the question of the car, and we got several others. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Rick Karch is here from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign, and if you have having car trouble, give us the best description. Tell us what kind of car you're dealing with, and Rick will see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And next, we'll talk with someone in Vermilion County, and this is line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking about the changing of air filters. I had a book from the library just on general car maintenance that said you should never take out the air filter and have it shaken out and put back because fine dust would get into the engine. So if you take it out, you should replace it. But when I go to either, say, a place that has sort of fuller service, if they rotate my tires and they say, well, change the oil at the same time, they say that they inspect the air filter, but they've never changed it. And yet I've gone also to some of these quick lube places, and they every other oil change want to sell you not only an air filter, but something they call a breather. I've never heard of a breather from any other place that's changed by oil. Could you make comments on this, please?
Well, the breather is oil breather. It's like a foam type filter. So you must have a car, what, in the 80s? The year of the car?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like a foam filter. Goes down by the valve cover area. And you have to understand when you go to these oil change places, the oil change is kind of like a loss leader. So anything they can sell on top of that is profit. So, but you know, if you ever have a question about a particular item that they want to suggest replacing or doing, just say, may I look at it, or can I see the color of the fluid, and then they'll explain to you how the color of the fluid should look when it's new versus the way it presently is. As far as the air filters are concerned, taking them out and cleaning them, there's not a problem with that.
There's not?
No.
Okay. So shaking it out is, and putting it back in is not...
No, that's
harmful.
Not an issue. So I would assume from what I've learned to this point that your driving is primarily in town. You don't live in the country?
No, I do drive in the country. Sometimes it's very dusty.
Well, then I would be surprised if you don't need an air filter, because that usually accumulates there.
Okay. If it isn't changed at the place that changes my oil, can I just walk into a store and buy one and pop it in myself? They're not hard to change, right?
Well, it depends on the vehicle. What year is your car?
Well, I have a 91 Olds.
Okay. Some of those are a little more difficult. But if you go into a parts store and purchase a filter, and maybe they can help you. Some of these parts stores will do that. I don't know which ones in particular, but I heard some of them advertise that they will help with, like, wiper blades and simple things like that.
And are there criteria for choosing a filter? Like, is it like furnace filters that you, some of them are pretty useless? Or
usually it's always good to go with the better line of filter. Some of the cheaper filters, the little fibers or hair pieces come off the filter and can contaminate some of the sensors in the engine, which the fuel injection relies on. So it's always best to buy the top-of-the-line filter. There are filters that you buy only once that are a serviceable filter. But in your case, I think if you just buy a good quality paper-type filter, you'd be fine.
Okay, and so just by visual inspection, if they don't recommend changing at the oil place, if you can get to it and visually inspect it.
If you hold it up to a light, and as long as you can see through it, in other words, you can see the light coming through the filter, it's fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Right, thank you. Let's go to, I think, line number 3 for our next caller. Hello?
Hello? Is this?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Hi. I have an 2000 Infiniti i30, and it's got about 198,000 miles on it, and I've had it since the beginning, and the first alternator lasted for 4 years, and then in the last 4 years, I've had to replace it 3 more times. Do you think I'm just getting bad reworked alternators, or is there something about the way it's sitting in my car that it gets, you know, I don't know, too hot or whatever, or should I have something else looked at?
So you're buying an alternator, how many miles, every X amount of miles, 10,000, 20,000?
Oh, gosh. I don't know on the, in the last 4 years, I've put in 3, so.
Well, they should not.
I don't know how many miles that would be exactly, but probably every 30 to 40,000 miles, something like that.
You're always buying the same manufacturer?
No, because they always manage to go out on me when I'm not anywhere near where the last one was replaced.
Why don't you just buy a lifetime alternator?
Is that a lifetime warranty or a lifetime?
Yes. Lifetime warranty on the part.
But then, is that replaceable anywhere, or do you have to go back to the place where you got it?
Well, it depends on the company that you purchase it from. If you purchase it from one of the parts stores that has stores all over the country, then you can warranty that anywhere in the United States. Is that what you're asking?
Well, yeah, that. But then my real question is, why do I keep having? It seems kind of frequent to me to have to replace an alternator that often.
Yeah,
I've never had that in any other car.
No, that's not normal. Either there's a problem with the car, or there's a problem with the products that you're purchasing.
Is there a way to find out if it's a problem with the car?
At the time,
what would the problem be potentially, and how do I find out?
Well, this is an internally regulated alternator, so it's all self-contained. So it has a battery connection, and then it has probably a two-wire connection, one for the field. And the likelihood of it being an issue with the car would kind of surprise me on an Infiniti.
Okay.
I mean, when you have an alternator problem, does the alternator and the brake light come on? Is that how you know?
No, everything just starts to fail.
The battery light never comes on?
I don't recall that it ever has, no. Uh-uh.
Does it even work?
The battery light?
Yes.
I believe it does, yeah. I mean, I've had my lights checked before, and they've all worked. I haven't.
Well, when you turn the key on.
Yeah, right, the lights all come on.
You should have one that looks like a mm-hmm. battery.
Right.
It does?
Yes.
Okay. Well, when an alternator fails, that light should either glow dimly or be bright.
Well, when it's failed on me in the past, it's been like in the middle of driving. And then all of a sudden, everything starts to shut down. You know,
well, then there's something.
The headlights start to dim and everything like that starts to go.
Then there's something wrong with the car because the battery light should be coming on.
Okay.
I think the next time you get in the car, just turn the key on, don't start it.
Right.
And make sure that light is on, and make sure that light is the same intensity as all the other red lights.
Okay.
But when you lose charging of an alternator, that light should definitely come on.
And at that point, how much time do you have before? I mean,
it depends on what consumers are on. As a general rule, when it drops close to 10 volts, the computers begin to shut down, so the car will quit running. But there is no answer to time. It depends if you're driving at night. Depends how many things are in operation. In other words, at that
right.
time, you're running off the battery.
Twice it's happened to me at night, actually,
yes. right.
where the headlights and things like that are on.
Well, I would definitely get it to someone that can check it out electrically.
Oh, okay, and check out to see if more than just the alternators themselves.
Right, because like I said, that alternator light should be coming on to let you know that it's not charging.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. And let's see, we'll go next to line number one. We'll get at least one more caller in here in Champaign County. Hello.
Hello, I have a 1996 Camry, and it's having an intermittent problem starting unless you feed it some gas. And recently, the battery was checked, and that's fine. The whole starter unit was replaced, including the solenoid, and the throttle body has been cleaned. And when this happens is only when the engine is warm and I'm running a series of short trips or errands, so that maybe the car is in a parking lot for an hour, hour and a half or less. And like maybe, you know, the third time I try to start it, it won't start unless I feed it some gas. Now, sometimes, you know, you can do a series of short errands like that, and the car will be fine. Maybe this happens maybe once every week, week and a half, that it won't start unless you feed it some gas.
And when you say feed it some gas,
press on, you know, when you start the engine, you're not supposed to have your foot, you know, normally you don't have your foot on the accelerator.
Correct.
But when it's in this condition, the only way that you can start it is if you press the press the gas pedal.
Okay. No check engine light?
No.
Okay. What kind of fuel mileage are you getting?
The fuel mileage, I haven't checked it lately, but it had been decent, and it seems, you know, from the frequency with which I go to get gas that it hasn't changed a lot. But is that something I could check that to see if it's...
Well, it was just the fact that you're having to step on the accelerator.
Well, again, this only happens occasionally.
Right. So, in other words, if you start cranking the engine over and it doesn't start,
it's like it'll crank, but it won't fire.
Right. So while it's cranking and it's not starting, then you slightly depress the accelerator pedal and it starts fine?
Yeah. Now, sometimes you may have to, you know, do it a little bit. Otherwise, you know, maybe you'll get out of the parking spot, and then it'll die again, and then you've got to restart it the same way.
Okay. And then when it finally does start, how does it idle?
Then it seems to run fine. You know, it doesn't die while I'm driving.
When after you've slightly depressed the accelerator pedal to get it to start, when it starts and idles, how does it idle?
The car has a fairly fast idle, but it's always had that, and it's never stopped while it was idling. You know, if I'm at a traffic, you know, light, you know, it's never died then.
Okay, but when it does start, does it idle smooth?
Well, not immediately. It's
a little rough for a couple seconds.
Rough, yeah, it's okay. Rough until it really, you know, gets a little bit going.
Okay.
Like a half block later, then it's fine, but immediately it's rough.
Okay, good. Okay. So you have an injector that's dripping fuel, a fuel injector?
There is something that's dripping from below the car.
Well, this is gasoline we're talking about. It's actually dripping fuel into the cylinder head behind one of the valves, they refer to as an intake valve. So when you start the car, the reason you have to partially depress the accelerator pedal is because it's got too much fuel already in there, so you're providing additional air. And that's what gets it started. And then once it starts, it's got that excessive amount of fuel in there. It runs rough, and once that's consumed, then it smooths out. Does that sound...
Yeah, that sounds just right. So it is the injector is dripping fuel into the cylinder.
Right, exactly. So
and it's that cylinder head, is that the intake valve?
That's where the fuel is being dripped to.
Okay.
Right. So why don't you try using some fuel injector cleaner, a product referred to as Tektron, Tektron.
Okay.
It's in a black bottle. You can buy it at any parts store. And use that for the next 4 tanks and see if it helps.
Okay. All right, great. Thank
you. Well, thank you. And we're going to have to wrap it up there with our thanks to Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive for being here. We appreciate it. He's here generally every season. We talk about car issues.